a British opponent who was already mad at FIDE for allegedly botching the bidding process and costing the player significant prize money. In 1975, Fischer had to contend with Karpov, a tool of the Soviet state. Okay, so that's it. Those are the two articles. So I am connecting the two because there's no question in my mind that they were doing two things here. One, they were having their little in-joke, feeling omnipotent by announcing in advance in code that my stuff is going to be robbed at Beacon. And the second is they were conditioning the public to accept it as a legitimate thing. Nothing illegal, nothing immoral, perfectly natural. Fischer is broke and his brain is gone. He's on drugs and he's depressed and so on, you see?
It's like you abandon your property, huh?
Right, yeah. This is the line the Jews are coming up with, that I abandoned my property. Yeah, right, right.
But they don't like this abandoning your property.
No, they don't denunciate it because then people will start to realize how ridiculous it is, because I sent the check to Ellsworth, I housed it in an extremely expensive safe, I put it in the best storage house, and so on. So they don't want to, they're just confusing people with all kind of stuff. He didn't pay this, his property was appropriated, and this was auctioned, and this was sold there. They've created a whole hullabaloo and confusion around it. But basically what they're claiming is that they have a right to my property because I abandoned it, which is an outright vicious lie.
Yeah.
I never abandoned anything.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. So, okay, I think,
I have the checks. We have those checks on the internet that I sent to Bob Ellsworth. Now, this Bob Ellsworth was my established agent. He's been paying this storage for years. Now, I sent him the check. It was a certified bank check. Not a personal check, and I sent it by registered mail.
Yeah.
See? And I have the copies. He was my agent to pay my bills. There's no question about this. What happened is he just entered into a conspiracy with Beacon to rob my stuff. He told me everything was paid, practically up to the day the Beacon was announcing auctions and stuff, you know?
Okay. I think you have explained
that. Well, not actually Dreyer and File. Beacon has never given any information about how they auctioned off my stuff. This Dreyer and File auction, Eugene, according to all the press reports and according to everything, is a re-auction, see? Somebody else bought it from Beacon, and now this is already a re-auction, see?
Yeah.
We don't know who bought it from Beacon. We don't know when this person bought it from Beacon. We don't know how much the person paid. We don't know what they sold the person. We don't know anything. Beacon refuses to reply to me. The press is totally disinterested. All the press wants to say is the property is not Fischer anymore. It doesn't belong to Fischer anymore. End of the story, see?
Yeah, okay. Because we still have many things to cover. You want to mention about your mother, you know, because I never realized you were so hungry.
I want to show that the intense hatred that the foundation no doubt had for me, because, of course, I beat the Jews in chess, and I'm the best chess player and so on, but also because my mother exposed the foundation, and she did it in a very erudite and brilliant manner.
I didn't know that, you know, when you sent me these papers of your mom,
yeah.
I didn't realize she had a very strong stand before,
about
1960. Yeah.
You might not believe this, Eugene, but I don't think I'd ever seen all of this stuff. I might have seen a paper here and there, but I never really read it before.
This
is the first time I've really got to study it, and it's almost 40 years old, these papers, these documents. Let me just read one page here. This is record of the American chess. This is from about 1960, you see. This is from around September or so, 1960. Record of the American Chess Foundation, 1372 Broadway, New York City. American Chess Foundation directors of the past 5 years must resign. A new administration must take over to work for the benefit of all chess. The record of the present directors of the American Chess Foundation is one of inefficiency, mismanagement, and operation contrary to the best interests of chess. Only a handful of Americans managed to represent the USA in a few events abroad, mostly at their own risk and effort. Others must stay home for lack of funds. The American Chess Foundation squanders thousands of dollars contributed for chess on so-called expenses, operating, administrative, salaries for director, consultation, and technical services, etc., all paid out to recipients whose names it does not reveal to the public. In its 5 years of existence, no financial reports have been published in the chess press. The U.S. Chess Federation, struggling for lack of income, publishes its financial reports quarterly. Here are a few items from the foundation's five-year record. Okay, now she lists some items, I'll read these items. But you can jump in, Eugene and Pablo, if you have any, you want to ask any questions or comments, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Refuses funds for the 1960 World Chess Olympics, October 14th, November 9th, because it is to be held in Leipzig, East Germany.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, but American chess is supposedly a very strong chess. How can, you know, you not...
Yeah, well, finally, we did go, but only through my mother's efforts. Let me continue.
Okay.
Made four conflicting statements as to how much it paid for the USA team in the 1958 Olympics in Munich, Germany. $2,500, $3,877, $5,500, and $6,318.88. Refuses funds for a USA-USSR 20-man team match with Talon Botvinnik, champion and former world champion. Originally set for New York in 1958 under State Department Cultural Exchange Agreement. It was postponed from year to year by lack of funds from the foundation. Now set by the U.S. Chess Federation for New York, May 1961. Foundation still gives no funds. By the way, that match never took place.
Oh, that's a pity, huh? That's a pity, no?
Yeah. Well, it was very interesting because it was going to be 20 boards, you know. I like these bigger matches in general. I think 10 boards is a little bit too small. This 20-board match is really exciting, you know?
Yeah.
See?
Wow.
Okay. Has not announced prizes or invited... I assume when they say 20-man team match, I assume they mean 20 and 20. Or maybe they only meant 10 on each side. I don't know.
Yeah.
But in any event, it would have been an interesting match.
Right.
Okay. Has not announced prizes or invited any players for December 1960 National U.S. Chess Championship.
Huh?
Nicholas Rosolimo, Larry Evans, William Lombardi. Oh, it's $50.
No
grants for and no grants for expenses in the 3-week event. No hotel expenses, nothing. Because almost everybody lived in the New York area. Chess was a very East Coast game in those days. See?
Uh-huh.
So they didn't even have any expenses hardly. In connection with putting the players up in hotels or paying for their food. See?
Yeah.
But they still were, you know, dingy and miserly and hard. Was putting up almost no money.
Okay.
$50 and no grants for expenses in the 3-week event. Foundation claimed lack of funds. Substituted lower-rated players for these three. There's another item. Refused USA college student team any funds to play abroad in 1959. Gave team only $260 in 1958 when it played in Bulgaria. Refused pay expenses for player to defend USA's only world title held in 1959. The World Junior Championship. Title lost by simple default.
Oh, my God.
Imagine that.
It was
the World Junior Champion. And then the next year, they simply didn't put up any money to send anybody in. Unbelievable, huh?
That's even... I mean, I thought Philippines, sometimes we have some problems, but this is much, much worse, huh?
Because these are Jews, Eugene. As bad as your federation is, and it's, at least they're not Jewish, see?
Yeah, but by the way, even at the time, you were still junior, no? I mean, at the time, you were still junior.
That's right, yeah. You know, I never played at any of these World Junior events, because the reason I wasn't interested simply because I considered it too weak.
Yeah, yeah.
From the time of 14... After I won the U.S. champ, there's not the slightest doubt I would have won it very easily every year. I could have been like 5 or 6, I don't know what the age limit is on that, but I could have been easily 5, 6, 7-time world junior champion, you see?
Of course.
Now, this would have been tremendous prestige, though, for the United States, which I didn't understand those things, because I was not very much involved in politics and propaganda.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should have made absolutely sure I played. They should have given me some nice money, given me some good incentive to go there and beat what I considered weakies, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But they didn't know. They didn't even ask me to go. They didn't know. No? Okay.
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 Maybe because of your mom already, because your mom was exposing them.
Well, yeah, they, not just my mom, they didn't like me either. The Jews are very sensitive. They have their antenna out, and they know the kind of people who are not ass-kissers, you see? They recognize that my mom's not an ass-kisser, I'm not an ass-kisser, that we're bad news. We're not going to play by the Jewish rules, you see?
Okay.
Let me continue here. Refused pay expenses for plan to defend USA's only world title held in 1959, the World Junior Championship, title lost by simple default. Incredible, no? Refused 1958 interzonal tournament players any funds after and before soliciting funds for them in Chess Review, June and August 1958. December Chess Review article by Jerry Spann implied funds given them. Correction was refused. Refused any funds to players in top category 1959 Challengers Tournament, Yugoslavia. Did promise small sum of $500. Gave nothing.
Yeah.
Gives U.S. Chess Federation, whose 4,500 members represent backbone of U.S. chess, no regular subsidy from the $110,456.92 it has collected in past 5 years. Now, you have to remember, this is 1960s. This is small money today, but $110,000 in those days would be like at least $1 million today. See?
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe a lot more, I don't know. But it was good, it was real. It was a lot of money in those days. Has withheld annual $1,000 achievement award and widely advertised Lessing J. Rosenwald trophy since 1956. Announced $2,000 prizes for a Thomas Emory Armed Forces chess project. Not further identified. Failed to announce $15,000, $282.56 in, quote, expenses paid to unidentified recipients, including such items as $9,000 operating and administrative costs, $4,000 technical and consultation services, etc. So you can see right there, there's corruption, see?
Yeah.
Now, advertised steadily all 1959 in Chess Review, for money to ensure that America will be well represented in the international chess field. Only three players were able to play up for the USA abroad in 1959. None got any funds from the foundation. Four players have played abroad in the past 2 years, a total of 11 times without aid or recognition from it. Since 1956, it is the single heaviest advertiser in the privately owned slick paper magazine Chess Review, which I would add is owned by the dirty Jew Al Horowitz.
Yeah.
Small official newspaper chess was owned by the dirty Jew Al Horowitz. He's long gone. Small official newsprint paper Chess Life struggles with deficit. Gets no advertising revenue or grants from foundation. Refused World Chess Federation proposal to hold 1959 Challengers Tournament in USA. Ignores proposal to hold events culminating in international chess event at 1964 World Fair. Demanded contract from player in return for expenses to tournament. Prevented contract terms from publication in the press. That was the contract they wanted my mother to sign, that they could use my name to raise the money, but it was like an open-ended kind of thing, so they could have been using my name endlessly to raise money for the candidates, see?
Yeah.
Oh. And it was this, my mother gave this contract in here, and a whole lot of other information showing what absolute villains the American Chess Foundation were and are. I think very recently, American Chess Foundation has changed their name to Chess in Schools.
Yeah.
I don't know whether the American Chess Foundation has been disbanded or whether they just changed the name to Chess in Schools, but it's the same people, it's in the same building as the American Chess Foundation was, this Chess in Schools, and the same people are running it, so nothing has changed. This Chess in Schools, I think they found it's a better racket for raising money, see?
Yeah, but your mother was.
They have a slogan, Eugene, push pawns, not drugs.
Yeah.
But very clever slogan, you know.
Yeah.
Just to trick people out of their money.
Anyway, your mom really came on really strong.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch. We got 14 pages of this on the internet, and I sent you another 5 or 6 pages. So,
yeah.
Incidentally, one page which I'm just sending you, which is not on the internet yet, but it'll be on there shortly. You should have it in a few days or months. But you have terrible mail, I know, from here to Philly. Anything's possible. But anyway, it's incredible. This very guy, this Jacques Coe, who was listed on the table of contents in American Chess Journal as a benefactor, my mother picketed this guy's house.
Huh?
Yeah, I sent you this paper. Yeah, it says here, picketing Mr. Coe, 39 Broadway, Bowling Green, Lexington Line, daily, Monday through Friday, 12 to 2 p.m.
Oh.
And then she lists the names of these of the American Chess Foundation, and Alexander Bissner was the vice president, but he was convicted of fraud, replaced by Mr. Coe in 1960.
Mr. Coe is a Juno.
Oh, sure. And Mr. Coe, he was also the president of the Manhattan Chess Club.
Well, anyway, of course we cannot read all these pages of many, you know. Anyway,
I want everybody to download that from the internet.
But anyway, I could see that a good part of your character came from your mom, because your mom was also, you know, very strong, you know, with these principles.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the main difference between one of them is that she used good, clean language, Eugene. My mother was after my bad language in the last year a lot, you know.
Yeah.
I was just showing my ignorance by that kind of language, you know.
Yeah. Well,
this is, you know, everybody has his own style, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but some people are disappointed that, you know, gone apart from your clean image, you know.
Look, there's an article here in, you know, when you talk about the goddamn Jews, you just can't help but using this kind of four-letter language. They're such filthy bastards. I mean, I have an article here in front of me. This is from the Jerusalem Post International Edition.
Yeah.
This is the week ending April 11th, 1999. And it's called The Crisis Minuet.
Yeah.
And it quotes Baker. And listen to what Baker said about the Jews.
Baker, huh? Yeah.
Yeah, James Baker, you know, former Secretary of State.
Oh, a very big politician,
big man, very, very well dressed, very well spoken, handsome dude, you know, from Texas.
Right.
Those were the days when Secretary of State James Baker was reported to have said, quote, "Fuck the Jews." Well, they say S dot 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 dot, the Jews. They don't vote for us anyway. So, then the article continues. That remark, as well as President George Bush's saying that he was, quote, one little guy in Washington battling the gargantuan Jewish lobby, and Baker's sarcastic quip to the effect that if the Israelis were sincere about peace, they should call the White House switchboard, sounded distinctly like the background flourish to a serious crisis.
Well,
that's very interesting. Look what Bush said, President Bush. He said, I'm just one little guy in Washington fighting the Jews. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, President.
Can you imagine how powerful the Jews are when the President of the United States says, I'm just a little guy?
Yeah, that's incredible.
You know, and this is not some anti-Jewish publication. This is the Jerusalem Post International Edition.
Uh-huh.
You see?
So... I remember you said that
actually, Eugene, my language has improved a lot. People don't know this. You know?
What do you mean?
Well, you remember this book, Bobby Fischer versus the Rest of the World by Brad Darrett?
Yeah. I remember
this book came out in '74. It was published by Stein and Day.
Yeah.
This publishing is a Jewish publisher. The owner was Saul Stein, a dirty Jew.
Yeah.
Anyway, this book quotes, here's a quote in the book here, this is page 51.
Yeah.
It said, worst of all, a chess official told me, every other word out of his mouth was fuck. He was an extremely vulgar and unpleasant boy.
It was referring to you.
Yeah, well, let me read the whole statement again. Yeah, wait, okay? It says, okay, well, worst of all, the Chesapeake Storm, every other word out of his mouth was fuck.
Every other word?
Yeah.
Every other word?
Yeah. See, now, I don't talk that way. You see, worst of all, Chesapeake told me every other word out of his mouth was fuck. He was an extremely vulgar and unpleasant boy.
Mm.
Now, I don't talk that way anymore. I mean, maybe every fourth or fifth word today is fuck, right? I've improved my language a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And also, Eugene,
You have improved, huh?
Yeah, people don't know this, but I have a very long-term plan over the next 20 or 30 years.
No? Yeah.
I intend to get my fucks down to maybe once every 10 words. Really?
Okay.
You know, I'm working. People don't give me credit for you know, how hard I try to improve myself, you know.
Okay, well, we are running short of time, so how about this one you said, the one also Jerusalem Post International?
Yeah, I want to make a mention of this. You know, you heard me reading all these statements about the Jews and how they, you know, how even the best of the Gentiles must be killed and all the Christians must be strangulated and all this kind of stuff. Of course, the Jews, oh, this is all lies. We have very high ethics, right?
Yeah.
Let me read something from their own paper. This is the Jerusalem Post, International Edition, week ending September 5, 1998. This is an article by a Jew called Jonathan Rosenblum. Some years ago, I was reading a weekly... I was teaching a weekly class in Ethics of the Fathers, and we arrived at the Mishnah, which instructs us to, quote, calculate the reward of the sin against its loss. See?
My goodness. You know, when you sent me this fax, I couldn't believe it, you know, that, you know, something is being published open, you know.
See, us Christians, Eugene, we are taught not to sin, period, right?
Right, not to sin, period.
We calculate the benefits of the sin, just don't sin, period, right?
Right.
No, but the Jews have a different approach to life completely. Everything is mathematical with them. These dirty Jews, who can the Jewish world government, and the dirty Jews who control the U.S. government, and the Jews who own Beacons. By the way, I believe, the more I follow this situation, I believe Beacons is probably owned by the Rothschilds themselves, because it's just unbelievable how the name Beacons, that who robbed all my stuff, where I had all my stuff in storage, how their name has been kept out of the press. So, I think, but even... what I was saying is, what was the point? They sat down, these dirty Jews who own Beacons and who control the U.S. government, and they just analyzed it, calculated it. What are the pluses of robbing all of this stuff in the storage at Beacons, see?
Yeah.
They analyzed. We get the stuff is worth enormous wealth. It'll be worth tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars eventually, maybe more.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
That's one. That's the plus. Another plus is that we don't control his image because we have all of his most personal documents, you see?
Yeah.
We can mold his image for all time to come. We practically own him. We own his soul now, you see?
And
we rob it. It will enrich us very much. It will impoverish Fisher. It will make him unhappy. And it will hurt him. See, that's another big plus, see?
Yeah.
And so they analyze all the pluses. And then they analyzed, and they said, also, we don't have to, another plus is we control the press in America and all over the world. We control the courts in the U.S. We control the Pasadena Police Department. So these are all the pluses they analyzed. Then they analyzed the negative. What is the negative? What is the downside? The downside is Fisher will probably make a stink about it, see?
Yeah.
And he might start exposing the Jews. But then, well, you know, how many people will hear about his attacks against us? How many people will believe it, you know?
Yeah.
So, they analyze it strictly mathematical, you see?
Right.
It's not like Christians who do things based on right or wrong. Because everything is, can you get away with it? Is it to our benefit, you see?
That's incredible. Anyway, what I don't understand is how come they even publish it, you know, like in the open where people can,
Well, that's a good question, but I think they feel it's important to keep in communication with their fellow Jews, and a lot of Jews don't speak Hebrew or Yiddish, so they have to communicate with them in English, see?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this is, I think they feel, also they feel that the non-Jews are pretty stupid, you know, they won't pay much attention to these papers, you know?
Yeah.
But as a matter of fact, since I've been reading this stuff from the Jerusalem Post International Edition, I used to buy them here in Budapest. I can't buy them anymore. They've cut it off. They don't sell it at any public newsstand here in Budapest. I've looked all over the city.
Yeah.
And I want to say another thing, Eugene, regarding this. Some people I know, they're going to download all this stuff from the internet about this article in American Chess Journal, and they're going to be skeptical, you know, because they're going to think, well, I don't know if they really announced it in advance. Because they're not, you know, malicious. Is that their style? Yes, it is. Let me read you something from a book here by Gordon Thomas called Gideon's Spies, subtitled The Secret History of the Mossad. This is page 71.
Yeah. We are running out of...
Okay, this will take about 30 seconds, Eugene.
Okay, good.
Okay. Okay. Another terrorist was asleep in a hotel room in Nicosia when it was wrecked by a similar bomb. To create panic among the remaining members of the Black September group who had killed the athletes. Those are the athletes in Munich, you see. Munich Olympics. Mossad Arab Sayyanim arranged for their obituaries to appear in local Arab newspapers. This is the key part now. Their families received flowers and condolence cards shortly before each was killed. Before is in italics, you see? So this is the Jews, they get a real kick out of showing their omnipotence. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're sending condolence cards and flowers to the families of the people they're going to murder. See? In advance.
Yeah.
This is you see, when you have the kind of hate and the sadism that the Jews have, it has to come out, you know?
Yeah. I'm sorry, but Pablo here is saying it's a new time, you know. It's unfortunate because we still have plenty of things to cover.
We're just getting into it. I'm sorry, Pablo. We didn't have much of a dialogue. I wanted to cram in so much information.
Wait, I give it to Pablo, okay?
Pablo.
Okay, wait.
Yeah.
Hi. Eugene said we just ran out of time.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Pablo. I didn't mean to hog the program and not let you talk. But I had so much information, I wanted to get out, and I was in such a hurry, you know.
Yeah, that's okay with me, and it's been fun listening to you and Eugene. We're just hoping we can have another time in the future.
So we can have more dialogue.
Yeah, right.
I wanted to get this information out. This is kind of a study broadcast.
Okay.
We'll get this off the internet and then download the documents so they can play it over and study everything. See?
That's right. All right. We'll do that. Bobby, thank you again.
You're welcome, Pablo.
Yes, and good night. Good afternoon.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Ubusan talaga oras natin mga kaibigan sa ating mag-ibag-usap kay Bobby Fischer.